Hello, my name is David Tullius, and today I will cover a policy brief designed for the National Security Council on whether or not the United States should employ Kurdish resistance fighters in its current conflict with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Herein, I will give a brief summary, explain some background and context, go into three policy options that the United States could pursue, some risks of those policy options, and then my final recommendations. In short, while I believe that in the short term, the United States could use Kurdish resistance groups to make an impact on the current conflict with Iran, I believe in the long term that this would be a poor decision, and it would be best for the United States to remain neutral in order to preserve what balance of power the Middle East still has, and to keep the conflict contained as much as it already can be, given the current dynamic nature of it. At the time of this recording, there is an unsteady ceasefire between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran, and while discussions are ongoing, there's far from a lasting peace. So some background. The ethnic group known as the Kurds are the largest non-stated people in the world, with approximately 40 million people spread out across Syria, Turkey, Iraq, and Iran. They have a long history of resistance and trying to find their own nation, most notably in Iran. After the end of World War II, there was a republic set up for approximately 9 months after the Red Army pulled out. That country was quashed by the then government of Iran. Those same Kurds, when the Islamic Revolution happened in 1979, were hopeful that the new government would commit to giving them some sort of autonomy. However, that was short-lived, and the Iranian Revolution also managed to kill tens of thousands of Kurds. In addition, the Kurdish people have been supported by the United States both in Syria and Iraq with varying degrees of success. In Syria, the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, helped fight Bashar al-Assad, as well as provide a bulwark against ISIS, the Islamic State. In Iraq, currently, after the United States invasion in 2003, northern Iraq is Kurdish, with a capital in Erbil, and they are semi-autonomous. They're part of the Iraqi government. However, there's issues with the federal power-sharing agreement, and many Kurds believe that they'd like to be independent. However, Baghdad does not want to see that happen, and requests for mediation between Erbil and Baghdad have so far fallen on deaf ears from the United States government. So the United States government has a long and complicated history of its dealings with the Kurdish people. And so at the beginning of this conflict, many rightly so looked at a people that might want to become involved and fight for their own autonomy against the Iranian regime as a possible ally for the United States in its struggle. In February of this year, several Kurdish groups all banded together to form the Coalition for Political Forces of Iranian Kurdistan. As the name might imply, those groups are pushing for Iranian Kurds to reassert themselves and at least gain some autonomy in the nation of Iran and in its territory. To this end, I have narrowed down three possible policy options that the United States National Security Council might want to undertake in terms of dealing with the current conflict with Iran and what we could do with the revolutionary motivated Kurds. The first option is that the United States openly supports and formally supports Kurdish forces as they attempt to assert themselves in Iran. This would probably take the shape of United States providing intelligence, logistics, training, ammunition, funding, heavy weapons, and possibly air support in the form of jets, drones, etc., for Kurdish forces to spearhead an invasion incursion into Iran proper. This would benefit the United States because it would distract probably both the Iranian army, Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps by opening a whole other front on another side of the country, as well as keep United States forces mostly out of the fight, right? We had several pilots that were in harm's way last week at the time of this recording. That aside, U.S. forces not being committed to Iran is seen generally as a positive thing. The negatives, of course, are that Kurdistan as a concept doesn't appeal to everyone in the Middle East, most notably some of our allies like Turkey. Our NATO friend Turkey sees many of the Kurdish groups that the United States deals with and that would want freedom in Iran as terrorist organizations and repress them in Turkey, and have gone so far as to attack those organizations in most notably Syria. So it would upset Turkey greatly, one of our allies in the regions, if we backed a Kurdish attack on Iran. In addition, the Iraqi government in Baghdad does not support this action at the current time. Kurds in Iraq seem more than happy to sit this one out, and they know that their territory would likely be used to spearhead this assault, and they don't want their own citizens, at least on the surface, to be targeted by Iran. And Iran has already targeted Iraq multiple times during the beginning of this conflict. That likely will not let up if it is, in fact, confirmed that Kurdish resistance fighters are crossing the border to invade Iran. The second option I would put forth that is available to the United States would be to provide clandestine support for Kurdish fighters that would like to attack Iran. This sort of threads the gap between help from the United States and support and not help. We can provide non-tangible assets like intelligence gathering, over-the-horizon radar, trainers in the form of their special forces or security forces assistants that operate in Iraq only, that can provide some, you know, training and other help to anyone pre-attack. In addition, having these operations be covert and deniable means that the political fallout with our allies, especially Turkey or in other countries like Azerbaijan, would be less so, as long as that clandestine action is not become public anytime soon. Also, if it became public that the United States had funded and equipped soldiers fighting in Iran, that would certainly negatively impact any future peace deals or ceasefire agreements between the United States and Iran. I'm sure that if I was Iranian, I would find it distasteful if the United States armed and equipped rebel groups that are going to affect my territorial integrity. The third and final policy option that I would put forth, as stated at the top, is the one that I would recommend, is to practice deliberate neutrality regarding Kurdish groups that are going to enter this conflict, right? This will keep our delicate system of alliances that keep the Middle East region together more so intact than others. And even the CPFIK, the new Kurdish organization, mega organization that's trying to get Kurdish fighters to go to Iran, recognizes that any large attack by Kurds into Iran is going to cause some serious problems. They know that Turkey will likely not be pleased, enforce buffer zones, which will negatively affect Kurds, not just in Iran, but in other countries. Also, there's issues with ethnic conflicts with Azerbaijan, which in the past have leveraged this sort of ethnic tension against Kurds. Also, the United States isn't really focused on this part of the country, right? Most of the current conflict seems to be focused around the Straits of Hormuz, Iranian oil, and its attacks on, you know, Gulf oil infrastructure. This option means that we can stay focused where it appears as if national security strategy is keeping us, which is on the free flow of oil through the strait. We may or may not want to get involved in a conflict up in a different part of the country while we're focused down at the bottom. Regardless of the policy option that the National Security Council should take, there are a lot of risks in choosing one over the other, and there's three major ones off the top there. The first is that the United States in the last 25 years has been subject to, shall we say, overcommitment in the region, and mission creep is a real thing. You know, a president or a government that commits today to supporting Kurdish independence is setting up future U.S. governments to have to do the same, or at least answer for them later on. And after several decades in Iraq and Afghanistan and other countries, we should know by now that those things lead to further on problems down the line. The United States should come up with a solid stance on where it falls for Kurdish independence across the entire region. But making this conflict be the force multiple, like forcing it on this conflict, probably not going to give us the best results. Second, the ramifications of a autonomous or semi-autonomous Kurdish state in what was formerly Iranian territory are beyond the scope of this podcast or policy brief, but would be huge. This is redrawing national borders in a large or small way. We're already struggling to keep Baghdad and Erbil, right, the federal government of Iraq, from being at each other's throats. And trying to do that in another country next door probably is going to yield a similar or worse result. Do we really, and by we I mean the United States, really want to find ourselves either attached to a semi-autonomous region that is relying on us for support, or once again abandoning an ally that we've sent in to do our dirty work? Based on the past responses of various Iranian governments, unless the regime in Tehran collapses and there's a completely different government, Iran's not likely going to stand for a part of its region being a region being parceled off into a free Kurdistan. And unless we're willing to commit to protecting that region, that's going to get ugly. And I don't think that we can stomach that. And last but not least, there's so many humanitarian concerns that would come up from any of these courses of actions, in particular, enforcing some sort of semi-autonomous region. Whether we do it or not, there's already humanitarian concerns. The whole reason the protest movement that began in Iran and Tehran specifically at the beginning of 2026 was because the city was running out of water. That led the Iranian government to crack down and kill potentially tens of thousands of protesters, and has now spiraled into a multi-state conflict, including the United States. That's not going away anytime soon, and setting up a new country or semi-autonomous region is definitely not going to fix it. It's probably going to make it worse. Additionally, there's already, by all estimates, hundreds of thousands of IDPs and internally displaced people in Iran, and likely a refugee crisis that would break out as soon as a new region was created in the area, right? Migration stokes ethnic tensions, and it overburdens humanitarian aid groups, NGOs, electrical grids, I mean, healthcare, fuel. That regardless is going to happen, and I believe that if we commit to building a new country in the Middle East, that's only going to get worse. Now, if we do go forward with this plan and, you know, an autonomous Kurdistan is created, they would get the benefit of, you know, the U.S. defensive umbrella, air defense, Patriot missiles, etc. But northern Iraq has that now, and there's still things getting through, and unfortunately that's causing casualties. There's no way we get out of this without more people being affected and suffering. And those who make these policy decisions, the National Security Council, have to take that in consideration. My final recommendation here is that the United States should maintain neutrality in regards to this Kurdish fighters crossing borders into Iran to make Eastern Kurdistan a free and independent state. Unless the regime falls, this is likely not to succeed, and the risks far outweigh the advantages. All previous Iranian regimes show that they will not tolerate this action, and they don't want Kurdistan to be a thing. And unless we commit fully to decades-long intervention in the Middle East, which I'm sure the American people has a stomach for, it's probably not going to go well. We should focus instead on keeping our political options open, sending, you know, keeping our delegates in Baghdad and Baku, Ankara and Erbil, to name just a few, and keep the conflict as small as we possibly can, opening a new front by sending Kurds, motivated and competent, I'm sure, straight into the IRGC's hands, probably likely to make the conflict worse, not better. We also do have tepid support for Kurds in other countries, which we haven't outlined, right? We support the SDF in Syria, but we're now also supporting the government, which are at odds with the SDF. We have positions that we need to nail down in Syria and Iraq first, without adding a country of almost 90 million people into the mix. The United States is in a delicate position. We're in the middle of an armed conflict, there's a ceasefire, and there's multiple pieces across the board that are moving at speeds that anyone would turn their heads at. And for a National Security Council staff, I wish you good luck. The United States has commitments, many commitments abroad that it needs to take care of, and we should be there to support our allies whenever they need it. But we need to be steadfast and encourage cooperation to deter any enemies against us. I believe the best way to do that is to limit the scope of this conflict the best we can and to maintain our alliances. I want to thank everybody for reading my policy brief and listening to this. For more information, I have my references at the bottom. I appreciate it, and have a good day.